everyone. This is Kristen Jesperson with the Chambers Coalition. Thank you for joining us for our 11th webinar. We will get started in just a second here. Having a couple challenges with our site, so I just wanted to make sure we have those ironed out before we started our webinar. So let's see here. Today we're going to be talking about voluntary surcharge programs, and our presenters will explain what those are momentarily. But I did want to kind of cover a couple basics about our web conferencing system. All of the participants, anyone who's not a presenter, is going to be muted during the presentation. So you will not be audible to us, to the presenters, until we reach the end, which will be the Q&A session. So I will indicate how you can ask questions when the time is appropriate. I do recommend, if you have questions, writing them down during the course of the presentation so that you can keep track of what they might be. Also, in lieu of a sign-in sheet, it would be great if you could sign in your name and your organization or affiliation into the chat box. And if someone could confirm that I am audible, that would be also great. It's nice to get that confirmation to make sure we're working and everyone can hear everything. Great. Okay, I got the confirmation. So I do recommend muting your computer. You should be listening to this webinar through the phone. You can listen to the computer, but we cannot receive questions from you. So through the computer. So if you intend to ask questions or you want to be able to ask questions, please use the call-in number that was provided on the flyer. When you do ask questions, please mention your name and affiliation. And the way that you can do so is to press star 1. And again, we will not click on those until or take your questions until all of the presentations have concluded. So a little bit about the Tamarisk Coalition. We are a 501c3, and we're based out of Grand Junction, but we operate throughout the Colorado River Basin and the southwestern U.S., and our mission is to advance the restoration of riparian lands through collaboration, education, and technical assistance. We work primarily through partnerships that are multi-stakeholder groups to help them accomplish on-the-ground implementation by providing a series of different levels of support. We effectively work and serve as a clearinghouse of information for riparian restoration-related resources, and we do this in a number of different ways. We have our Riparian Restoration Connection website, which provides information about various training and funding opportunities. We monitor the distribution of the tamarisk leaf beetle, and we are building up our website, www.tamariskcoalition.org, to become a true clearinghouse of information for all related subjects to riparian restoration work. We empower practitioners by working with those partnerships that I mentioned. We coordinate trainings and workshops and help them carry out their day-to-day activities. And we enhance frameworks for restoration by helping advance policy in restoration areas and working to research sustainable funding resources and improve education and outreach about related subjects. So this webinar series is one of those strategies. This is our 11th webinar. And we are always accepting webinar suggestions through, you can send them to me, and I will incorporate them into our list of different opportunities or subjects that we might cover through this series. Thanks again for participating. And I'm going to introduce our first presenter momentarily and pull up her presentation. Our first presenter is Molly Murphy. She's the Executive Director of 1% for Open Space, and has been in this position since 2005. 1% for Open Space is the oldest and most established voluntary surcharge program in the country. Prior to serving as the executive director, She has taught outdoor adventure skills and environmental literature at Lesley University, Colorado College, and Colorado State University. Molly is also a well-published professional freelance writer, and we welcome you to start your presentation. Are you there?
I am here.
Great. I can hear you. So kick it off. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Kristen. I appreciate it. So as Kristen mentioned, I'm Molly Murphy, and I'm the executive director of 1% for Open Space. And I'm going to start just with a couple of basic definitions. I'm going to give you a caveat to this, that I realize that most of the participants in this program are interested in working with riparian preservation and restoration. And so a lot of the ways that I'm going to frame this are in the sense of preserving open space, because that's what we do, but it's easily transferable, I believe, to what you all are doing as well. So 1% for Open Space is an independent and unaffiliated 501c3, and we essentially are a consortium of local businesses that are working to permanently preserve open space in Gunnison County, Colorado. And we do this by raising funds through participating businesses who ask their customers for a voluntary 1% donation on top of gross sales of products and services. With this method, over time, since 1997, we have raised over $1.9 million to protect over 5,100 acres in Gunnison County. So we have several values that drive why we do this. When we preserve open space, we are helping to protect, one, our spectacular view sheds. It's an amazing drive into the valley, and so preserving just simply that view shed corridor is important to us. And I'll again say that I mentioned these values because it will be important as you establish your own similar voluntary surcharge programs to find the values that you can identify with and that the public can also identify with. But these are just ours. So one of our second values is our recreational access. We are a tourist-driven economy. People travel here to camp, to bike, to hike, to horseback ride, to hunt. And so making sure that recreational access is in place and permanent is important to us. We also, when we're preserving open space, are able to preserve wildlife habitats, so riparian zones, elk migration corridors, open space for endangered species such as the lynx. We also have a really strong ranching heritage in the Gunnison Valley dating back to the 1800s. So we do help place conservation easements on working ranches. And for us, this, for the public, helps preserve those viewshed corridors. But for the ranching community here, helps preserve their lifestyle, another economic driver in the valley, and helps us maintain that culture that really established these communities originally. We enjoy a rural lifestyle here. We have a lot of open space. We have a small population, and so preserving more open space helps us preserve that slowness, that slowness, that pace of life, and that quality of life that we enjoy in our rural lifestyle. And then we are also able to preserve watersheds and ecosystem integrity. So just being able to keep ecosystems intact and preserve land that's going to help keep our watershed that provides our drinking water pure is important. So who is 1%? I really feel like we are comprised of three different prongs. The first is the organization itself. We are a very small organization. We're run by one paid employee. That's the executive director, and that's me. And the organization from there is governed by a 7-member board of directors. The majority of these members are local business owners who are actually business participants in the program. And then the foundational piece of our organization is simply the methodology of collecting this 1% voluntary donation from customers of participating businesses. The second prong are the businesses themselves. So they are really the funnel for the funds. some of the easy examples that are available to go to quite readily are restaurants and retail stores. But we also have a really wide variety of other businesses that participate in the program. Guide services, they're taking people on hiking and biking trips. People in the building industry, so we have a painting business, a plumbing business, a sheet metal business. Health and beauty service providers, these would be estheticians or massage therapists, hair salons. Artists. We have a lot of landscape photographers and landscape painters in the valley that participate. Property managers, people who are managing second homeowners' property for vacation rentals, do collect 1% on those stays. Landscaping companies, and our local ski industries also participate. So Crested Butte Mountain Resort and Crested Butte Nordic Center, two of our major economic drivers in the business within our tourism industry, participate in the program. And we have realtors that participate. So the bottom line here is that any business can participate. There's really no limit. They don't have to be a guide shop or an outdoor retail store to find that connection to preserving open space. The third prong of our organization are really the customers. So these are people, anyone walking into 1% business and opting to give that donation is a customer and is really the financial engine of the organization. So they are year-round locals, second homeowners, and visitors. So what I hope to impart to you today is that the true beauty of 1% is really in its elegant simplicity, and that word simplicity is really important. The basic process is a customer identifies a 1% business, they walk in and decide to buy a jacket, and they then are able to make that 1% donation at the point of sale. Each of these businesses collects these funds over time, eventually remitting them to the organization. As those funds collect, entities working to permanently preserve open space in Gunnison County can then apply to 1% for these funds. So what is the customer experience? The customer is able to first identify a 1% for open space participating business through a sign like this. This is a cling sticker that is on every storefront of every business that participates in the program. And so as a customer is walking up the main streets of Gunnison or Crested Butte, they can readily identify a 1% business by this sign. It is a requirement that each of our businesses have two forms of notification of their participation in the program in their actual place of business. So notification on websites or in ads in the paper or additional, but we make sure that each business has these two forms of notification. Now, each business is going to have different needs. So for our restaurant businesses, we provide them with signs that they're able to slip into their check presenters. We have signs for registers, signs for storefronts, a variety of sizes, so that it's easy for the businesses to put a sign that fits in with the personality of their business. So when a customer goes to these businesses, it's important to note that it is entirely voluntary. So if a customer doesn't want to donate, they simply tell the clerk or the waitress or whoever they are interacting with at that business that they would like the voluntary surcharge removed from their tab. And here you can see two more examples of signs that just show the customers that the donation is being offered and that if they don't want to donate, they do need to tell their cashier. To give some sort of realistic framework of what we're actually asking of the customer is that the donation is really very small. So Danita's Cantina, a Mexican restaurant here in the program, has been here since the beginning. You can go into their restaurant, buy $30 worth of burritos and margaritas, and your donation option is going to be only 30 cents. Similarly, if you go into our local outdoor gear store, the mountain shop, buy a $100 jacket, rain jacket, then $100 is going to garner a dollar donation. Kind of bumping it up a notch, when you stay in a cabin rental from one of our other participants, Crested Butte Property Management, that $6,000 cabin rental is actually going to garner $60 donation. So for these kinds of large donations, we, as an organization, always offer businesses to give donation receipts to their customers so they can deduct those from their taxes. But what we've learned over time is that it doesn't matter what the price point of the donation is, from 30 cents to $60. People come here, whether they're living or visiting, because it's beautiful and because they're able to reconnect with their families, they're able to use our natural resources, participate in our recreational tourism, and so they're happy to donate and give back to that. They recognize this is a unique community and a unique program. In turn, we make available these Proud Patron stickers. So this is what you see here, and they are just bumper stickers to put on your water bottle, your bicycle, your car. And we hope that it generates a cyclical awareness for businesses. They see the Proud Patron stickers. They know that 1% is supported. And likewise, the customer of the business feels really proud that they are a frequenter to these businesses. So what does the business experience? The first thing that is really important to note is that participation is free for the business. We live in small communities here in Gunnison County, and these businesses get asked for many donations. And so this is a way for them to contribute to a community program without it actually impacting their bottom line. It doesn't impact their income at all. We have a contract that they sign, and you can find this contract on our website. And it gives us a lot of information to help support them, but it also asks them to make a choice of whether to submit their donations on a monthly or quarterly basis. Once we have the contract signed, we begin advertising this business's participation in the program. And so this is an example of a thank you ad that we run in our local paper. This is welcoming Third Bowl homemade ice cream. And the ad serves several purposes. One is to say thank you to this business for participating and to give them as much promotion as we can. But the second is also to communicate to customers that Third Bowl Ice Cream has just signed up, and if they would like to frequent another additional 1% business, then they should go to Third Bowl Ice Cream. One of the most perceivably daunting task for a business is actually setting up their register and their accounting system. It's actually very easy, but in order to facilitate the process and truly make it free and truly make it easy, we have a volunteer bookkeeper that can go to the business that's just signed up and help them set up their register or accounting system for them. We hand out their signs, they post them. We can help educate their staff. Oftentimes it is the person at the desk, the waitress at the table that's actually interacting with the customer, not the business owner. So we make sure that their staff is also educated on some basic bullet points of how the program works. Once all these pieces are in place, the program, the business is able to begin collections. So we work really hard to make participation easy for our businesses. We work with them to make the voluntary surcharge automatic. The reason for this is that if we're holiday shopping season is on and there's a line out the door at the mountain store, it's really difficult for the clerk at the desk to feel like they have to explain the 1% program to every customer while the line builds. And then, quite frankly, this is bad for business. So we don't want to do anything that adversely impacts our participating businesses. Thus is the reason for all of our signage, our ads, our website presence. All of these pieces help to educate the customer so that they are aware that the option to donate exists at this business. The reality is, as we talked about with the last slide, is that few refuse. From any business, no matter what the price point, from the $30 burrito to the $6,000 cabin stay, most choose to give to this program. So that makes it easier for the business. But we also provide them with as many materials as we can come up with to help advertise their participation. They have brochures they can give to customers. We've created flyers for in-room guides for our lodges. We give them their signs. We provide wording for their websites. For folks who don't have a money exchange over the counter, they're invoicing their customer, we provide sample invoices of what that might look like. We give them fact sheets for their employees that have that bulleted list that can be posted in an area that employees can have ready access to, so that if a question comes up, they have an immediate answer for their customer. And we work hard to promote our participating businesses. When they make money, we make money, and then we can preserve more open space. So this is an example of an ad that runs in one of our local papers every single week, and it lists all of our businesses. Again, serving the dual purpose of thanking the business for participating, but also notifying the customers who these businesses are so they can intentionally target them. We run press releases about their participation, especially when we're talking about different projects that we've helped fund. On our website, you'll see that each business has their own web page built inside our website with contacts and links back to them, again, driving business to them. We do a lot of Facebook posts about our businesses, perhaps sales they're having, things that they are wanting to share with the public. We help them do that. And then occasionally we come up with special programs, such as our Trail Ferry coupon program. So recently we funded a project called the Kachiver Parcel, and the community was involved as a whole in building a trail on this parcel. So I handed out Trail Ferry coupons that were a 10% discount at each participating 1% business, creating that really tangible loop that if volunteers wanted more land to support more trails like this, they needed to encourage their fellow business owners to sign up, and they needed to frequent these businesses that are on this list. So our experience as 1% is pretty simple. Collecting funds through the voluntary 1% surcharge is our sole means of fundraising. We do have 100 participating businesses to date, and through them, we raise about $130,000 per year. This is dependent on the economy, on how vibrant our tourist business is going overall in the Valley. So that number does fluctuate, and that's okay. We do not own land or hold the conservation easements or the trail easements, and we do not initiate the projects. So really, we are simply an economic engine whose singular focus is to raise money to permanently preserve open space lands. And we do this essentially as a granting institution for entities working to permanently protect open space in Gunnison County. So we're a checkbook for these organizations. Once we collect all these funds from our businesses, it lays in wait for one of the organizations in the county to come and ask us for that money. So 1% places these donations we're collecting from the customers and from the businesses in high interest bearing accounts in anticipation of incoming projects. Any entity that wants to receive these funds must have a focused project. So we don't fund operating expenses. We don't help promote or fund other fundraising projects. The entities applying to us for funds have to have a particular piece of land, a particular conservation or trail easement or trail project they're working on for us to be able to give them money. They must complete an application process, and I'll talk about that in a minute. So this application is reviewed by the board of directors, and if it seems to be good, we're getting a good price, has a good public service for the community, then it is approved by the board of directors and funds are granted. So through this, 1% has helped fund 5 organizations in Gunnison County. And these include the Trust for Public Land when they have a local project. It's our only national organization we've assisted. The Gunnison Ranchland Conservation Legacy, the Town of Crested Butte, Rocky Mountain Biological Laboratory and the Crested Butte Land Trust. But this isn't a conclusive list. Any organization working to preserve open space in Gunnison County can apply to us for these funds. Our grants tend to be around $50,000, but they can range anywhere from $10,000 to $200,000 per project. So the application process. The application for funds requires that the grantee submit the following information. They must have a project description, a budget. They must identify the environmental, cultural, and recreational values. They must identify the public benefit. They must submit financial statements of the requesting organization. They must submit the proposed easement. If there's a trail easement or conservation easement that's going to be placed on the land, we want a copy of that. And they must identify the property uses, so whether this is going to be a working ranch, it's for hiking or biking or horseback riding, we want to know those uses. Most of our properties do have conservation easements or trail easements placed on them, but we also have a grant agreement process that helps further protect the land that we're giving money to. So the grant agreement declares that the property must be maintained as defined in the application, and that if there's going to be any changes that are significantly different from the application or from the conservation easement, that we be notified. At that point, we have the opportunity to refuse that change, and if the organization decides to continue with the change, then we will retract our funds. The idea is to ensure that the properties are being preserved in the spirit in which they were applied for. And so we keep tabs on this through yearly reports on the property from our grantees. An important piece that I want to bring up is that 1% is rarely the only funder of a project. And with only $130,000 worth of income, we're rarely the largest. As many may know, buying land is not cheap around here. So our power really comes from not only the monetary assistance, but stating with a clear voice that 100 businesses support open space in this county. And this helps us leverage much larger funds with greater effectiveness. So, for example, Great Outdoors Colorado, or GOCO, is a fund collected through lottery money that goes towards open space. They have the capacity to give millions of dollars, but they will only do so if they know there's public support for the project. And so when 1% grants money to a project, we have a 100-voice statement that says, we believe in this project and we believe in open space and it's the value of ours as a community. So here is one of our maps. This is our north map. We actually have three, just dividing up the different places that we do fund, all in Gunnison County exclusively. But this, I feel, helps demonstrate really that everything we do is in partnership with someone. We're not the ones coming up with the project. So I've kind of plucked out a little piece of this map, and you can see if you look closely that some of them are outlined, some of these properties, colored properties, are outlined in red. And these are the properties 1% helped fund. The colors inside of these red outlines are the organization that we worked with. So through this color coding, you can see that no project is done without a partner. The colors represent the Trust for Public Land, Gunnison County Legacy, Ranchland Conservation Legacy, Town of Crested Butte, Crested Butte Land Trust. So you can see that we're always working with other entities. So a question I get, everyone knows it works. I get a lot of questions all over the nation about this program, but why does it work so well? Well, the first thing is I believe that participation is free for the business. So it, again, doesn't impact their bottom line. And then the second bullet point, it's easy. It doesn't take any longer once the program is established. Each month is only the time it takes to write a check, quite literally. Accounting programs spit out the amount that the business needs to write the check for, and they write the check and they're done. Businesses are so occupied with running their own business that if you add something too cumbersome to them, they simply won't be able to do it. It'll fall off the plate. So 1% being easy ensures its success. I will say there is a bandwagon appeal once the program is established. People want to be a part of this club. Once they see their business associates next door to them signing up, it's going to make them want to sign up too. The motivation is really small on the part of the customer, and this helps us create our tagline, saving paradise pennies at a time. So the customer has such an easy donation to give that anyone and everyone can participate in preserving open space in Gunnison County. Any contribution from 30 cents to the $60, no matter how small, counts. You don't have to be a big donor of $10,000, $25,000 to be able to feel like you've made a difference. In a program like 1% for Open Space, everybody has that capacity to make a difference. And every participant, from the customers to the business, is doing so voluntarily. So everyone's really happy about participating in the program. Now, Crested Butte and Gunnison do have a unique factor in their favor, in that recreational tourism is our number one economic driver in these communities. So it's a pretty easy sell for us. But in addition, the ecosystem services that we provide with this open space that drive participation in the program, our business owners' knowledge that beauty, recreation, and the preservation of a lifestyle and cultural heritage are also being preserved. But the bottom line is, 1% for open space literally preserves the very thing that makes Gunnison County businesses money. So I get asked a lot how to build a successful program. I certainly will say that a lot of our free advertising and marketing opportunities are really appreciated by our businesses. As a nonprofit, we can promote their business often for half the cost than they can as a for-profit business. So they appreciate this, and it's financially hard to make a business here in this county, so any help promoting them is really appreciated. Again, we make it easy. We give them everything that they could possibly imagine to help support them and advertising them in the program. And we work really hard to make sure businesses and customers both feel a part of the team and proud of their contributions, no matter how large or small. We have businesses that give multiple thousands of dollars per year, down to businesses that give us under 100. And it's important for me to make sure that each one feels important for their donation. And then you've got to make the connections. Educate your businesses about what their efforts have gone to preserve, and educate your customers about what their pennies at a time have gone to conserve. One of the ways I do this really strongly is through pictures. They speak 1,000 words. If you're preserving a piece of land, just that picture is going to really be a strong message to the community. And something I strongly believe in building a successful 1% program is make it personal. Here, this is Dan, and he owns Double Shot Cyclery down in Gunnison. I could have easily used Dan's logo, but that doesn't help me make that personal connection with customer to business owner about who Dan is. It makes it a really personable face that you can connect to, and I find this extraordinarily helpful in promoting the organization. It's also, I feel, important to connect with your business. Really work hard to make the program fit to their needs. The overlying concept, of course, is this 1% voluntary surcharge. But how it operates in each individual business can be customized. And let those businesses get to know you. Let them know that you're out there for them, there to support, and they can contact you at any time. Again, the personal connections are huge. And to just drive it home a little more, keep it simple. We are economically successful because we have figured out how to make the organization run with very little overhead. Our operating expenses are very small. Part of it is that we have a singular focus, a singular mission, and a singular way of raising money. So we're not involved in a lot of extra business in the organization. We are simply preserving open space. So as I've said, it's about making connections. Don't limit yourself to thinking only the outdoor gear store is going to be a likely candidate for signing up as a 1% for open space business. Here I've got Aaron. He runs Mountain Spirits, one of our local liquor stores. you might not think wine has anything to do with open space, but I know that Aaron loves to hike and bike. He's raising a family here. And so I know that making that connection through his personal interests of open space is going to be important. And then on the right, I've got Jason. He's a customer, a proud patron. I know that Jason is an avid skier, again, hiker and biker. So what I need to make sure Jason knows is that if he wants to have more space to recreate in, he needs to buy his bottle of wine for his date night from Aaron and his liquor store, Mountain Spirits, so that I'm making those connections between those two entities. And then with both of those, with the customer and the business, it's really important to make sure they know what they're helping to preserve. Get them out on the land. Get them pictures of the land. Make sure that the press knows what you're helping to preserve so that they feel proud of their 30-cent donation. So what do you do if you're just starting out? I found it's super simple, but the best way to sign up a business is to set a coffee date with them. This way you have their undivided attention. I found that meeting with the business inside their place of business is not effective. They're going to try to multitask. They've got customers walking in that need their attention. Grab them for 45 minutes or an hour and treat them to coffee. It's $2 to $4 on the part of the organization, but it's a really nice gesture for the business owner, and they really appreciate it. In the beginning, I feel like it's also really important to create that bandwagon appeal. Go out with your full board. Don't just go out as the employee. Have a happy hour social for the entire business community with appetizers and drinks and information about the program and the ability for everyone to sign up en masse. Advertise businesses as they sign up, so you really are creating that bandwagon appeal. And then create partnerships. I have created partnerships with Coal Creek Watershed Coalition, the Crested Butte Farmers Market, the Office for Resource Efficiency. And at first glance, you might think, well, what do those have to do with open space? But in my ability to have a booth at their local water fair at the farmers market, I'm able to talk to an audience that's already probably predisposed to appreciating what 1% has to offer. And so whether they be a business owner or a customer of a business, because all business is going to need that customer, then they're already going to have open ears for me. In addition, I've connected with our local tourism association, working with them to promote green tourism and ecotourism, as well as our Chamber of Commerce, who we worked with strongly so that they created a value statement, an official value statement of theirs, is in recognition of open space as an economic driver in the valley. And then everyone knows, if you've worked in nonprofits before, that advertising is really expensive, even prohibitively so. So get your local newspapers on board. My newspapers, we have three, all are participants through their in-kind ad donations. So this cuts down on my costs, but I treat them just like a business that's collecting donations with ad promotions and website promotions and Facebook promotions. It also frees up the ability to utilize their free services of submitting press releases and notifying staff photographers of events. If you have that booth or you have that happy hour social, make sure they're there to take a picture and put it in the paper. So those are the basics of what I've learned about establishing and running a 1% for open space program. I would encourage anyone that has questions to go to our website, 1%foropenspace.org. Much of what I've talked about and even more is there, and you'll see a lot of resource pages of different documents that I share with our businesses that can help you get started with businesses you're working with. You'll see how we treat businesses on their individual webpage inside of our website, and you'll also see how we treat each of our individual properties. And so once you've fully explored our website, be sure to drop me a line over email or give me a call at the contact information you see here to ask me any specific questions that might come up. And so that's the end of my program.
Great. Thank you so much, Molly. That was very informative. I want to remind everyone that we will have the presentations, the PowerPoints themselves available on our website, and that the recording of this webinar will be available as well, so you can revisit some of this information in the future. I do have bad news. We are not able to upload our next presenter's presentation because the web conferencing system is experiencing difficulties. So, Jonathan, do you mind unmuting yourself and letting me know if you think that you can go ahead and give your presentation from your computer, and if we can have everyone just listen in? And if you want, I can email it to you if you enter your email address into the chat box. Jonathan, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. I apologize for this last-minute challenge here. We've been corresponding with the support staff from AccuConference, and they are having challenges throughout their system, so it's not just us. Do you think you can go ahead and give your presentation just over the phone?
Yeah, the thing that would be useful is, well, two things. I see that somebody just put their email in, but most critically, it would be very useful if, in particular, you could put those YouTube links in so that when the time is right at the back end of the presentation,
yeah,
people can...
I will do that. Hopefully that works. I will. I have those links, and I will see what I can do to pull those up. You just indicate when you want that to happen. But in the meantime, I will email the presentation to folks so they have access to it on their own computers, and hopefully we can make this work from there.
Okay.
Let me do a quick introduction to Jonathan. Jonathan is the executive director of the Chart Tour Institute, a Jackson, Wyoming-based nonprofit that he founded in 2001. Jonathan is a native of California and now a longtime resident of Jackson Hole. He holds a bachelor's degree in human biology from Stanford University and a master's from Yale School of Management. Welcome, Jonathan, and thank you so much for working within our constraints today.
You bet. It was going to be a hard act to follow Molly anyway, and now it just became even more challenging. So let's see, where to begin? Is there any way, I see that a couple of people have asked to get the PowerPoint. Is there any way to know if they've received it and opened it? Because that might help a little bit with the synchronization of things.
I think that's going to be challenging to synchronize everyone. Maybe if you just, when you were going through the presentation, indicated what slide you're on so that everyone...
Yeah, I just didn't know whether they'd had it, so whether I should just assume that they had it and have it open, or... How to proceed from here?
I would say just get started, and then we'll have everyone kind of independently catch up as they receive it. It's being sent right now.
Okay. Well, let's, as they would say in The Sound of Music, let's start at the very beginning. So, Chartour Institute, my organization, I founded it in 2001, and the idea was to, it was clear to me from the independent consulting I was doing before starting the organization that, excuse me, places located in spectacular natural settings, Crested Butte, Jackson Hole, Moab, if you visited these communities, which I was doing a lot in my previous life, the newspaper headlines were all basically interchangeable, and all of them were fighting the same kinds of problems, facing the same kind of challenges and opportunities. And so the question was, why is this? Because each of them seemed to have ideas about what was going on, but none of them could really seem to have figured it out. So I started Chartour as a... The name is a contraction of charting the future. And the idea there was to try and do a little bit of analysis and just start with what's really going on. So our foundation is as a think tank. And so we have five elements in what we do, and it all starts with understanding. It's a data-driven effort to try and understand exactly what's going on with the world in these communities, what's driving them, what's driving the growth and change that all of them are feeling, experiencing, and in many cases anguishing over. We go from there into education. Once we learn something, we try to go out and talk about it and teach other folks what's going on, and we do this locally. Jackson Hole sort of serves as the lab bench for my research, and then quite literally yesterday we had an all-day conference about the future of the local economy and by extension the community. And so we've replicated that in some other communities as well, including some really glorious time I spent in Crested Butte. Then our feeling is that simply understanding isn't enough. You need to act on it. So we develop conferences and then internal actions within communities, and we're starting a regional and national reach on that. It's not necessarily enough just to act, though, because when one acts, oftentimes, particularly for startup ideas, that the kinds of things that are really going to make a big difference in the long run, you need to be able to get some seed funding into it. And that was the whole principle behind running 1% for the Tetons, which was to develop seed principle for actions that were going to make a significant difference in sustaining the essential qualities of the Teton region. And finally, all this is very well and good, but nonprofit organizations, particularly ones in the environmental world, often have a reputation for being ponderous and dull and heavy. And so we include a celebration element. If the people are doing really great things, let's celebrate what they're doing. And so those five elements, understand, educate, act, fund, and celebrate, form the foundation of what we as Chartour do. And as I say, 1% for the Tetons is a component of that. 1% for the Tetons is not a standalone organization, but it is a project of the Chartour Institute. So I'm moving on to the second slide, the second content slide, the headline of which reads, 1% for the Tetons is the only local affiliate of 1% for the Planet. In 2005, I staged a conference.
Jonathan, I'm going to interrupt you really quickly to mention to everyone that I think we were able to successfully pull the presentation up. And if you're not able to see it, then if you reload your page, you should be able to. Jonathan, can you see it on your screen now? No?
Nope.
Okay, well, if you reloaded it, you might be able to make that work. In the meantime, I can just go ahead and forward the slides for you. You said we're on slide 2.
Yeah, I will. I'll have to reload my page, which means I'm going to have to sign in again, which is going to take a second. So,
you can just keep presenting, and I'll take care of the updating of the slides if you just say what slide we're on.
Oh, okay. Well, so I'm the second slide.
Great.
And so 1% for the Tetons is the only local affiliate of 1% for the Planet. 1% for the Planet was started in 2001, coincidentally about the same time my organization was, by two people, Yvon Chouinard, who is the founder of Patagonia, the outdoor clothing company, and a colleague of his, Craig, or a friend of his, Craig Matthews, who is a fishing guide in West Yellowstone, Montana. And a lot of the initial support for 1% for the Planet was housed within Patagonia, and 1% of the Planet became its own standalone organization in 2006. But for its first 5 years, it was nurtured under the auspices of Patagonia. And the idea there is that member businesses give 1% of their gross sales, at least 1%, not of their net profit, but of their gross sales, to environmental groups. So if you have, say, Kristen's Sandwich Shop and you gross $100,000, you would donate $1,000 of that, of your gross revenue, to any one of 1,500 environmental groups around the country, or excuse me, around the world. It's about the Planet. And Patagonia was already doing that. Blue Ribbon Flies, Craig Matthews' business, was already doing that. And so they decided they would try to institutionalize it in a formal fashion, and that became 1% for the planet. In 2005, when I had my State of the Community conference, Yvon was he's a friend of mine. He has a second home here in Jackson Hole. And I asked him if he would give a keynote address, which he was kind enough to do. And he talked about 1% for the planet, and shortly thereafter, as is true with many good ideas, I was having a beer with a friend of mine who also attended the presentation, and we hatched this idea for 1% for the planet, 1% for the Tetons. It fit logically within Chartour's purview because we were encountering this problem of generating really good ideas for sustainability-related efforts, again, the act of the first slide, but the people who were coming up with these ideas couldn't figure out how to fund them because, like many good startup ideas, it's hard to get that initial money. So I went to Yvon and asked him for his blessing for starting a local chapter. He said yes, and that's when we got going. The idea was hatched in 2005. We launched the organization in 2006. And the way that it works mechanically is that if you are a business, Kristen's sandwich shop once again, in 2013 you grossed $100,000, and so during that year you would, at the end of the year you'd figure out how much it is you grossed, and then in the first quarter of 2014 you would write checks for that amount to the organizations for which you were to which you were contributing. So that's the way the 1% of the planet model works, but it's based on your previous year's revenues. So in 2006, we signed up our first members, but they didn't start writing checks until 2007. The fundamental difference between 1% for the Tetons and 1% for the planet, our sister program, is that 1% for the Tetons, all the money comes to us as an organization, and we turn around and we grant it out to projects that are submitted to us. We put out a request for proposals every year, every spring, and then we figure out how much money we've gotten in from our members based on their previous year's revenues. And then based on that, we go ahead and put the money out there to these different projects. So if you go to the next slide, slide number 4 in the deck, which is entitled Statement of Ideal, I wanted to do this local project and have it the initial seed money based on my experiences running a nonprofit, because I realized, to repeat myself, that first money is always the hardest money to get. And I've had experience working in a previous life trying to apply the Toyota production system principles to healthcare. And what Toyota does is, rather than a mission statement or a vision statement, they have something called a statement of ideal, which is both aspirational, in other words, like a vision statement, it gives you a sense of what you as an organization aspire to, but it's also operational. It's very clear in its definition. And so it's much more, in that way, it's a much more effective tool than a mission statement or a vision statement. So we created a statement of ideal, which, as the slide says, we award high leverage grants, and I'll parse this sentence in a second. We award high leverage grants to forward-looking projects sustaining the Teton area's natural resources and related qualities. So what do we mean by high leverage grants? We don't have the resources to be a sole funder, and we don't want to be a sole funder because we, as 1% for the Tetons, believe that the kinds of challenges facing the Tetons region, they cut across economic sectors, they cut across political jurisdictions, they cut across all sorts of different fields. And so we feel that the most effective way for any project to be able to address, to have the greatest chance of success and to be able to address complex problems, is to put together teams. So of the many, the 5 or 6 dozen grants we've given out, we have only had a handful where we've been the sole funder for any of these grants. So high leverage, our dollars are going to go far, and we are going to use that money to not just encourage other funding sources to come in on a particular project, but we are also going to try and use it to encourage our applicants to build coalitions to get the job done. Forward-looking, We want truly innovative projects. We want projects, sort of in a public health metaphor, that anticipate future problems and keep them from happening in the first place, or projects which take an idea that we can see will really build into something successful over the long run. So we don't want to do the easy stuff. We want to do stuff that involves, we want to fund stuff that looks over the horizon. Sustaining the Teton areas, it's not, Jackson Hole, Wyoming lies in Teton County, Wyoming. Our belief is that the Tetons, the greater Jackson Hole community is one community in two states, Wyoming and Idaho. Idaho is just on the other side of Teton Pass from us, just to the west, and three counties. It's our county, Teton County, Wyoming, the county immediately to the west in Idaho, which is also called Teton County, and then the county to the south of us, because those have de facto turned into Jackson Hole's bedroom communities because of our housing prices, and we are all linked by our economy, by our lifestyle, by our values. So one community, two states, three counties, that forms the Teton area. And our basic rule of thumb is that if you can stand on the top of the Grand Teton and see something, then that's the territory that we fund. And then the final piece of it, natural resources and related qualities. It isn't just natural resources. We are a community, and the community involves, our foundation is our environmental health. Our environment is our economy, but it spills out into related qualities as well. So it can be education, it can be art, it can be other things, but the foundation is natural resources, but natural resources in and of itself are not enough. So that's what we do, is we provide small amounts of money that are highly leveraged to forward-looking projects in this greater Teton region that try to affect things. So if you go to the next slide, number 4 in the deck, please, or I guess it's number 5. It's a graph. It has green bars and orange dots. So as I mentioned, we started collecting money signed up our first members in 2006. In 2007, we made our first grants. And so the orange dots represent the number of grants we gave out in a particular year. As you can see, we give between 7 and 10 grants a year over the last 7 years that we've been awarding grants. And in our peak year, we gave out about $150,000. And last year was the least amount of money, and it was about $60,000. And so all combined, we've given out 63 grants, so an average of about 9 a year. And we've given out almost $700,000, so an average of about $100,000 a year. If you go to the next slide, please. As I mentioned, high leverage grants. Well, what does that mean? We try to get other organizations, our applicant organizations, to partner with other organizations and really try and deal with complex, difficult issues that otherwise would not get addressed by conventional funding mechanisms or government agencies or the like. So our ideal project would be one organization, usually a nonprofit, is leading the charge, but in an ideal world, we would have a combination of a nonprofit, at least one nonprofit, at least one governmental agency, and at least one private sector entity coming together to try and address a very difficult issue. And the other nonprofits and other partners, businesses, what have you, would be contributing money to this. What 1% for the Tetons has developed a very good skill at is validating. If we're going to fund a project, then other people know that it's going to be a good project, and what that does is catalyze the release of funds. So as a result of this, the blue bars, you can see that that's the amount of matching resources, both in-kind and cash, that have been devoted to our projects every year. And if you add it all up, matching resources have totaled over $3.3 million for those 63 projects, 333 partner organizations. So if you do the math, each project we funded has got an average of about 5 or 6 partner organizations, and each project that we've done has turned loose about $50,000 in matching resources, and as a result, if you look at the actual cash we've done and the leverage that comes from it, it's been about a 5-to-1 ratio. For every dollar that we give out, it frees up about $5 in other matching resources and in-kind efforts. So if you go to the next slide, please, the one that's labeled Our Timeline. And I can't see what's on your screen right now because I wasn't able to log back in, so I'll have to do that after we get off the, after I'm done making the presentation. So, as I say, we got the idea started in 2005. In 2006, we started recruiting our first members. 2007, we awarded our first grant. 2008, it was the peak of dollars granted. And there were a couple reasons for this. One is that there's a phenomenon here. Molly mentioned in Crested Butte how it's a bunch of small businesses. Well, our members tend to be small businesses as well. And there's a phenomenon where people's eyes are much bigger than their stomachs, by which I mean one of the beauties of Molly's approach to a 1% is that it's voluntary and that customers are paying all of the money that gets donated. We are agnostic. We don't care where you get the money. We just want 1% of your gross. And so, for instance, we have a bagel shop in our community, which was a member, and you go in and you pay $4 or whatever it is for your bagel and cream cheese. Embedded in that $4 already is the sales tax charged or levied by the state of Wyoming, and they can't sit there and calculate $4.24. It slows down their business. So they have embedded in that $4 already the sales tax that they're going to have to pay to the state of Wyoming. They also embedded within that $4 the 1% that they were charging their customers. Other businesses put a distinct surcharge on top of it, sort of a voluntary surcharge like Molly's, and our experience was similar to Molly's where nobody really said no because it was a nominal amount. And then other businesses just take it out of their bottom line. So we don't care where it comes from, but we demand a full 1%. And we have, through our relationship with 1% for the Planet, you have to submit to them your financial statements every year and evidence that you've donated 1%. We also partner with our local community foundation, which serves as the bank, essentially. So a member of 1% for the Tetons will donate 1%, their 1% check to the community foundation, which keeps it for us. And the reason we do that is because when we were getting going, by working with our community foundation, it added some credibility to our efforts. Everybody trusted the community foundation was not going to abscond with their money. Nobody knew us, and it was just an easier way to do it. You are talking to the entire organization for 1% for the Tetons, and as I indicated in that first slide with the five facets of what we do, I've got a lot more going on than 1% for the Tetons, and so by outsourcing the validation process to 1% for the Planet and outsourcing the banking to our community foundation, it makes life a lot easier for me. And back to the eyes bigger than the stomach phenomenon, a lot of people signed up, and we require a 2-year commitment because of this lag between the first year when you got the moment you sign up, you get all the benefits and privileges of being a member, but you don't have to write a check for a year. And so because of that lag, we require a 2-year obligation. And a lot of businesses signed up immediately only to find out later that they simply couldn't afford it. And what happened where I said in 2009, recession starts affecting membership. So the recession hit in 2008, end of 2008, when we were still sort of in our nascent stage. And when it came time in 2009 and then 2010 for people to start writing their checks to us for 1%, some of the businesses had gone out of business. Some of the businesses found that that 1% was really going to be the margin of whether they stayed in business or not. And so we don't really have an enforcement mechanism except to drum them out of the core if they don't pay. And so what we found was that a lot of our members stopped being members because they stopped writing us checks. it's a very high bar for a small business in many cases, particularly if they're existing business, to refigure their books and their whole operating system so that they can write that check. It becomes a high psychological hurdle. Once they build it into the business, then the business can usually support it very easily. But for small businesses, that initial 1% is often more than they can handle. So between having people get started when their eyes were bigger than their stomach and then having the recession hit, we saw a loss of members over the period of time, say 2009 through 2011. We launched something like Kickstarter, a local version of Kickstarter, before Kickstarter really got going in 2010, called 128. It was we were trying to get people to donate to people in the community to donate additional dollars to our projects. It worked well because we got another $40,000 in from the community, but it created a lot of problems logistically, which I didn't have the resources to handle in further years, so we got rid of that. And so in 2011, when we saw this slow erosion continuing, we started asking ourselves, well, what can we do to really elevate our profile and make 1% for the Tetons a more exciting effort? So we took some money in 2012 and we launched what we call our Video Blitz, which was very successful. And the idea was we took half a dozen of our projects and we went out to local filmmakers, or 8 projects in year 1 and 7 in year 2. We went out to local filmmakers. We offered them a nominal amount of money to take 1 week and make a 3-minute film about 1% for the Tetons projects. And then this gets back to the celebrate portion of the initial 5-pointed star of our of what Chartour does. So we had this video blitz, and it gave us a chance to showcase local filmmakers. It gave us a chance to showcase 1% for the Tetons projects, and it gave us a chance to celebrate all the cool stuff going on in the community and show how deep our reach was into various facets of the community. So we did that in 2012. We did it again in 2013, both years very highly successful. And that with an improving economy, has really put us in a position for 2014 where we're going to start our first formal outreach, because we've been able to get some resources in. We're to bring in somebody to help me with a formal marketing and recruiting plan. So we think we sort of hit bottom and started coming back up in terms of what we do. If you go on to the next slide, please. And so what I'd like to do is show these two videos. Between them, they last about 8 minutes. The first one, the 1% for the Tetons video, is an overview of what we do. And the second one, the Candyland Trail video, it's one of the videos that was made for the 1% for the Tetons video blitz. And this was one of the projects that we funded. And as you watch the Candyland video, just be aware that we matched the filmmaker with the project on a Saturday at the beginning of October, and 1 week later that film debuted. So this was all done in just 1 week. And so with that, Kristen, if you want to launch the videos, I will go and re-log on to the webinar website so that I can see where you are. It gives me a chance to do that, and I can be quiet while the films are playing.
Okay, let me see if we're able to do this, if our system is working well enough to let us use it. Let's try to see here. I just tried with the 1% for the Tetons video. Let's see if it'll let us do that. Thanks, everyone, for your patience with this these technical difficulties. I really appreciate it. I know that it is no fun when these systems aren't working. But let's see here. That first link doesn't seem to be going, but let me try the second link. That might work. It worked earlier. I'm not seeing anything pull up. Again, the system is How about this? I can you can send out the links through the chat box, and that'll be a good start. Just in case I'm not able to pull them up publicly. So the first link that I sent is the 1% for the Tetons link, and then the second one is the Canyonlands link. And if we're not able to watch them as a group, try one more time, then you can watch them individually. And again, Jonathan, I apologize that we've been hijacked by our system here, but I think that it's not going to upload. In which case, we are close to the end of our 90-minute session here, so I'm going to allow folks to ask questions by pressing star 1 on their phone. If you have a question, please go ahead and press star 1, and we will call you in the order that those questions are received. I personally had one question to kind of kick off the Q&A session. And again, Jonathan, sorry that we're not able to watch those videos as a group. But I think this probably relates more to Molly's presentation, but I'd be interested in what you both have to say about this. It seems that one of the initial challenges of setting up a voluntary surcharge program really has to do with kind of determining the capacity necessary. And I know that Molly said your program had a volunteer bookkeeper that went in and set up the accounting systems for the different businesses. I wonder about some of the logistics behind that. Did you have to kind of set up that system in place, or, did you have to – you it sounds like you're fortunate in that you have a volunteer bookkeeper, but in many instances, I think organizations would have to pay for such a function. And I kind of wonder what some of the upfront capacity demands were and if those were challenging to get through, and if you have any recommendations for organizations that are looking to potentially set up a similar program, how they might think through some of those demands.
Yeah. You there?
Yes, I can hear you.
So I'll please, if I don't answer your question in full, please direct me to more of the specifics of what you're talking about. But I think when you're first starting out, you know, you're trying to convince businesses to be a part of the program. And one of the some of the places that I would target in the beginning would be some of your likely candidates, the gear shops, the guiding companies, and whatnot. And this can help you start building your list and create that bandwagon. But one of the other places that can help build your bandwagon are things like engaging a volunteer bookkeeper. So our bookkeeper, I treat just like a participating business. Her name's Lynn Moore, and she has her bookkeeping business is called Moore for Your Money. And so I do Facebook posts for her. She has a web page inside of our website, and she's on our list so that it helps with the bulking of that list in the beginning to include your in-kind people. Like I said, Lynn is a bookkeeper. She actually helped establish how the logistical side of the program would work with these different accounting systems. She, you know, most people are on QuickBooks, and so she helped create how it would work on QuickBooks. So what we found is someone who we felt was going to be in line with the mission of 1%, asked her to help us establish the logistics of the program. Over time, she's helped me create bullet point lists, and I work with her, emailing with her and phone calling with her about how to communicate with business owners about that piece of it. So that, you know, for the business owner, for us, what that did was allowed us to say, in truth, to the business owner, this is totally free. What we realized at one point was if we're saying this is totally free, but you have to pay your accountant, you know, for 5 hours of work and setting it up on your accounting system, it wasn't actually totally free. And so Lynn helped us say, if you really want it to not cost you a penny, then here's this person that can help set up. For the business, that's really the only thing that's going to cost them any time or money at all. I mean, once it's established, we give them everything they need, and they literally, it just is the time it takes, like I said, to write a check. You know, for 1% from the organizational standpoint, the upfront costs are going to be things like creating a website, which we all know can be a couple thousand dollars to many more thousands of dollars than that. You know, we have an intro packet that is an 8-page, full color, very glossy, very flashy with pictures packet. You can find it on our website and download it to catch a peek of it. So the graphic design, you know, I wrote the text inside of that, so that was just an employee expense, but the graphic design on that was a couple thousand dollars. And the printing of it, you know, to have signs printed up would be another upfront expense of, so that as soon as someone signs up, they need to have that sign in the window alerting their customers if you do the model that we do. And of course, the signs serve to help promote that business and create that bandwagon appeal. So any sort of visual representation of the organization through the business has this sort of multi-layered benefit for us. But I would say from that, you're ready to go. You have an intro packet, you have a website, you have a volunteer bookkeeper, and you have someone that's willing to run the program. And those are kind of the basics of what you need. What that is all told, you know, when we first began, our intro packet was a Word document with no pictures, not very flashy, but also not very compelling. So over time, we've updated our website, we've updated our intro packet, we've updated our signs to be more modern looking and to include more information and be more visually appealing. But there are ways, you know, we do have a WordPress website. We did have a professional designer create it, but then when I add a business to it, I can go in simply and add it, and I'm not constantly paying a graphic designer to add a business or add a new property. I can interact with the website quite a bit. So, you know, our website in the beginning was very simple, but I also think it wasn't very effective. So, you know, upstart sort of material costs. Gosh, I mean, I think you could start a program like this for under $10,000. We certainly started it for way less than that, probably under $5,000. Just depends on how flashy you want to be from the get-go. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's very helpful. So what I'm hearing is there's the support for incorporating the accounting practices into the local businesses, and then there's the marketing and sort of the branding of this project and helping the businesses promote the cause that this funding will go towards.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, like any nonprofit, if you're going to have a kickoff party, you know, a happy hour party, as I suggested, then working with a local business, you know, having it at your local coffee shop, and their original participation in the program might be to donate a couple hundred dollars worth of coffee and donuts so people can have that, and again, you're able to add their name to the list as an in-kind donor. To me, an in-kind donor and an actual 1% business participant collecting money from their customers doesn't look different. But those kinds of donations can help you start. And the paper, having the local paper be a partner, I can't even stress how helpful that is. Print advertising is incredibly expensive, and if there's a way to get your local papers to donate ads, you know, that is a great monetary offsetter. And we, you know, our local papers donate a lot of our ads, and then we do purchase a couple of ads from them. So we do try to give back to our in-kind donors in ways like that if we can.
Okay, great. Jonathan, did you have any thoughts to share?
I have an awful lot, I have a simple question. Molly, you said that you guys raise about $130,000 a year. is that where all of your operating revenue comes from? And if so, what's your annual operating budget? Well, either way, what's your annual operating budget? And if that doesn't come from your donations, then where do you get your money for operations?
Yeah, it does come from our donations. So that $133,000 covers everything. And our operating expenses are about $36,000 a year.
That's your salary and all other operating costs as well?
Yep. It doesn't speak well to my salary, does it? I'm part-time, so I run the program on 20 hours a week. And there's lots of little ways that we've cut corners. I mean, our advertising, like I said, we have these 100 businesses, and we depend on them to advertise for us. I am constantly encouraging them to put our logo and links on their websites and on their ads and things like that. I feel ultimately at this point it would be nice to be able to establish an endowment to be able to pay for our operating expenses. Even though they are low, I think it would be a magnificent statement to our businesses to say 100% of their donations that they collect is going right to open space. So I feel proud of how little we're able to run the program on, but I do think an endowment would to help with offsetting those operating expenses would be helpful.
And I wanted to make note of the point that you made, Jonathan, about working with the Community Foundation. That is something that we have been exploring as an option, especially since a lot of these partnerships are not a single formal nonprofit organization, but multiple different groups working together. I think your point about working through a community foundation and establishing a fund through them is really valid as a way of establishing credibility and ensuring sound administration of the program. And there are some costs associated with that as well, correct? They typically charge a fee of sorts.
Well, we are considered, in their parlance, a donor-advised fund. So it was as though I were a very wealthy person and I put some money in. And
oh, okay.
They handle everything for us for free. Where they cover their costs is that they take the money that my members donate and they can invest it. And
mm-hmm.
So that's where their money comes from. So it's free.
Okay.
I don't have to pay for my validation with 1% for the planet, and I don't have to pay for my banking, the acknowledgement letters for a charitable donation, any of that, because my members, because it's coming off their bottom line, it's treated as a charitable donation, and so there's just some bookkeeping involved with that. I am freed of having to do that because of my relationship with the Community Foundation of Jackson Hole.
Well, that's great. That's a really interesting component because there are different ways to set up those funds. So it sounds like you have a really smart program in place. So it doesn't sound like any of our participants are asking questions at this point. But I, again, want to thank our presenters for some really informative and compelling and understandable presentations about this type of program. I know it can be kind of challenging for folks who aren't fundraisers to kind of understand the mechanics of. So I sincerely appreciate you both taking the time to explain that for us. And I apologize that our system has been acting up today. This is kind of first time we've experienced that. So thanks so much. We got a comment saying great information. Thank you all. And again, this presentation will be recorded, and the presentations, the PowerPoints, will be available on our website, so you can revisit that. And I want to provide presenters with an opportunity to say any last thoughts that you might have, if there are any.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, you first.
Oh, well, I was just going to say I very much appreciate the opportunity to participate. Thank you for organizing it, Kristen, and Molly, I learned a great deal from what you had to say. It's a very interesting model you have going on there, and I congratulate you on your success. It's really great.
Well, likewise. And I also appreciate the opportunity to speak and would just say there's a lot of programs out there. And the model, you know, as Jonathan pointed out, that the 1% model can be adjusted to fit what you feel like your community can accommodate and for what your goal and mission is. So I find it a really flexible program, and I think that's why they are successful. So thanks for the opportunity to share that.
Yes, great final point. I think that is a great takeaway. You can design this type of program to meet your needs, and there are a lot of ways to do that. And these are just two examples, but they're two successful examples. So thanks again for participating, and we will be in touch. Take care, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.